So I think I'm going to start with just a general question. How many folks here work with some concept of the shadow, either as a psychological term or as one as part of their spiritual work? Okay. Here's what I'm going to suggest to you. That is just the starting point, and the work now is to expand it. Often people speak of the shadow as being that which is pushed aside or repressed or placed into the deep reaches outside of view of waking consciousness. And that part is true. A lot of times people refer to the shadow as those things which we find unacceptable or hard to cope with or hard to deal with. And that is true as well. But I also think that, like so many things, that we lose out by seeing it in such a flat way. The shadow is also a rich source of creativity, connectivity, and insight. And I'll explain what I mean by that. I'm also going to expand it into the idea of it being a threefold shadow. How many of you work with some concept of the self being divided into three broad pieces, whether that be in the fairy tradition or the idea of lower self, middle self, higher self, or nefesh and ruah and neshama, or fill in the blank. There are quite a few traditions that offer that threefold division. And as far as I can tell, much of the work of the witch, the shaman, the mystic, the magician is about connecting those three layers of self, those three domains of consciousness. It is simple extension to know that if we have threefold consciousness, then we have threefold shadow, and that the shadow manifests differently in those three arenas of being, or those three kinds of consciousness. In the same way that we catalog and work with the idea of how each of those levels of self work spiritually and magically, it behooves us to explore how the shadow manifests and expresses at each of those levels, because only then is it possible to then provide an opportunity for integration. It is hard to integrate that which we have pushed completely to the periphery. And even harder yet, when we view it as something monolithic, as being one thing rather than having its own shape and consciousness. And the heat is off, we are pleased now. We're going to keep requesting that because, unfortunately, everything on this building is on timers and they reset themselves periodically, as we may have discovered. Anyway, so I want to talk about something about negative evil and positive evil before jumping in the rest. Have you heard those terms before? A few of you have? Okay. So, are there hard things, difficult things, unpleasant things that are absolutely necessary for the health and welfare of the planet and the individual? Absolutely. Absolutely. So we do have the idea that there are some things that are necessary pains and some things that are unnecessary pains. The shadow contains both. If I were to ask you what connects us all together, one of the things that people speak of is the idea of we are all one spirit, we all are interconnected, the universe is one, etc., etc., and I believe all that. But it's usually framed in terms of the light and only the light. Do you understand what I'm saying? We are also interconnected, one to each other, at the level of the shadow. And unless we understand what is going on there, then it is hard to be a whole being. I'm going to point out something that I think is the shadow's work that each of you enjoys. Have you seen a flock of geese in flight change direction quickly? Or video, if you haven't swum underwater, of a school of fish suddenly moving quickly as one unit? Have you heard, jazz musicians or whatever music you like, jamming together and creating music, moving from riff to riff and rhythm to rhythm, as if they were one thing, that's your lower self shadow. That's your lower self. What's the lower self among other things? It is the primal self. It is the animal self. It is the instinctive self. It is also faster than conscious thought. We have glimpses of this. There are all manner of people that can do amazing things without conscious awareness. By the way, there is a prejudice in our culture, in our language, about light and dark. I often say that we have to consider not just the clairs, which is my name for the catch-all of like clairsentience, clairaudience, clairvoyance, all the clairs. We also have to recognize all the noirs, all the darks. So for example, if somebody is doing automatic writing, do the words appear in the mind or do the words appear in the hand? They appear in the hand. The whole point is, it is not reaching the level of conscious awareness. It is being directed from deep down and from the part that is not lit. So what I would suggest is that much of the connectivity that we have as a species occurs at that level. So the shadow of the lower self is also the place where we have many of the points of connection between all of us, because instinct is faster than thought. By the way, because of it being a class where terminology is often everything, and we have a lot of different kinds of groups of people, so your terms may be different. If you want a clarification or if you have a question, it is probably best to jump in as it occurs to you rather than waiting until it seems like a logical or reasonable place to pause. I'll set the boundaries. I'll get you back on track if we drift off. But if you have a question, ask it as it occurs. Now, one of the reasons that we are often interested in what is going on there is that that's also the place where primal things like fear and rage and lust, animal power lives. It is also the place that knows how to build the nest. It's also the place that knows how to do things without thinking about it. When we think of the light, what do we think? We think in terms of what we call representational consciousness. We think in terms of thought. Even if it is higher order thought, it is still representational. It is still about images and light and emotion and words and notation to some degree. The lower self is the dreaming self, but even if you call the lower self the dreaming self, the dreaming is still in the light. There are a few geeks in the room, I assume. Well, I would say that the lower self is the place where the machine code of the universe lives. In other words, that code that causes the computer to do what it does, that's completely invisible to you, that which exists at the level of we're pushing things from one place to another, from one register to another, that is at that level of being. Yes, ma'am.
What's the connection to yourself?
Well, take one step to the side. Now, how many people divide the astral or you saw? Is that a term that makes sense to everybody here? Okay, how about this? One step away from physicality, the place where things are shaped and prepped to come into manifestation, the place where everything begins to almost condense and prepare so that it can come into this place. Think of Yasod and the tunnel path that connects us to it as being the birth canal of the universe, if you want to do it that way. And I'm using that advisedly because what about this? Does nature know when something does not fit the rules of manifestation and prevents it from hatching? Absolutely, absolutely. So the point is, The yasod, or the astral, is the place where everything is tested against the ideal and the possible, and what actually can actually survive in manifest reality. The reason we associate the lower self so strongly with psychism and with magic and with power is because it's also strongly connected to the last stop, the last staging area before coming into physical manifestation. And indeed, we often speak of that place as having more than one layer or level, and there's lots of terminology because we have different traditions, different cultures, but how about this? If that's the place where things are being formed, let's compare it to something biological for a moment. So, let's say that we have something that is getting ready to come into being in the physical form. So it's in the womb of the universe, or it's also the machinery of the universe. You can both apply in a different kind of way. Does your genetic code contain all the things? Oh, absolutely not. The child is also being shaped by the environment of the moment. The child is being shaped by the hormone levels that fluctuate with the mother, what she's eating, what she's experiencing emotionally, everything about her, plus the subtle fields of energy, Rupert Sheldrake's morphogenetic fields, and a ton of other things. So you saw the astral, the lower self, has a higher, a middle, and a lower layer as well. And indeed, sometimes people get worried because unpleasant things may be lurking there in the lower levels of the astral or lower levels of yasod. But here's what I'm going to say is that it is the lower self shadow that is part and parcel of what gets allowed to be here. There may be the impetus, there may be the intention of this is what I want to bring into being, whether it's magic or a child or a puppy. But ultimately, in addition to the genetic code, if you will, which I am putting it as out as that that's the light, that's the order, that's the law, that's the word, fill in the blank for how you want to visualize it, conceptualize it. That's part of the instruction set, but it's not the whole deal. It's not the whole deal. If I had to remember how to produce all the enzymes and acids and peristaltic motions that are needed in this instant, having eaten lunch, I would be in great trouble if I had to consciously work out digestion. The lower self shadow and the lower self in general are doing the things that we don't think about but are really high order, highly complex things. So if we don't understand that, then it becomes much harder to work with it, especially for folks that are on a magical path, because inevitably, once you start doing magic, you begin to awaken everything within you, both the light and the dark. So, and if you haven't seen it, I will do the minor castigation and say that you have to go and buy it for $1.99 somewhere. You can buy a video of Forbidden Planet. How many people have seen Forbidden Planet? Ah, yes, very good. So, besides the fact that it is Leslie Nielsen's very best role, Forbidden Planet is a cheesy classic science fiction, and the part that applies here and is actually quite real is that once upon a time there was this amazing culture that reached this pinnacle of development. Sounds vaguely Atlantean, by the way. And they reached a place where they wanted to take the next step, and they wanted to have control over their environment through the agency of consciousness alone. So they built these huge machines, and they delved deep in the earth, perhaps too deep in the earth. I wish I was at The Hobbit. And they built machines that converted thought to physicality. Do you need food? Do you need a house? Do you need whatever? And this amazing civilization killed itself in one night after they turned the machine on. Why? The machine amplified all of them, not just the them that is speaking with words and waking consciousness. It amplified every last thing that was them. Because the other reason that this class is experimental and important is, you know, even though you're in this room, and I do it all the time, it's easy to assume that the part of me that is giving this class is the largest portion of me, and it is not. Do you understand what I'm saying? It is easy to forget that your waking consciousness, the self that begins everything with an I statement, is only a part of you, and not necessarily the biggest or the strongest part of you. Yes, ma'am?
Is it like the iceberg where two-thirds is underneath?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the waters are murky. And it's late at night and we're on a ship. Yes. So that the bulk of our powers, if you will, lie below that level. What happens if you try to understand the universe through consciousness that's representational and notational? Even if it's, you know, higher heart, higher mind combined, you are still only interfacing with the upper level portion of it. You're not getting down into the works. And that's the place where I think, I'm going to jump for a moment into something I want to call form consciousness, and then we're going to look at the diagram, because I think diagrams help a lot. I don't have a good word for this. Language is often a limitation in this. But if I were to, for those of you who have workings or dealings with angelic beings or gods and goddesses of the cosmic sort, of the broader sort, do you suppose they use words like we do? Not so much. Not so much. Do you suppose that they, therefore, when they perceive the universe, they do not perceive it as boundaried or notated the way that our consciousness is? Our consciousness is like a musical score. It has starts and stops and notes of different length. Theirs does not. They experience the universe as it is, which means as it is manifest. I'm going to use the word form because I don't have a better word for describing the universe as it is actually manifest. So imagine beings whose thoughts are actually the shape of, say, space, time, existence, rather than these things we call words or images or emotions. That part of us which is on the light side, which is the part that's the tip, can only go so far. The bulk of us that actually speaks the language of the universe is there. With me so far? Okay. Mostly. Let's look at the diagram, because that might be a way of proceeding with this. Like I said, the outline is there mostly for your note-taking. We're not going to stick to it very closely. This is a diagram that attempts to conceptualize some of the ways that this threefold division of self exists. And you've got, let's start with the very bottom one, which is the lower self. What kind of words are we seeing there? Holographic order, lower world, divination, nephesh, lower self, mutable modality. With me so far? What's a hologram? Da da da. Three-dimensional image. So if I had pretend.
Created from a two-dimensional pattern. Created from a two-dimensional pattern.
So it is a projection of three dimensions onto a two-dimensional pattern. Okay. And made of what? How do you make a hologram?
Constructive interference of radiation.
Constructive interference of radiation. That is exactly the answer I was looking for, which is why I'm staring at you. Okay. If we were to throw a handful of pebbles into a pond, you would see all manner of ripples overlapping with each other, right? And some of those ripples would overlap in a way that the ripple gets bigger, and some of those ripples would overlap in ways that the ripple gets smaller. I'm simplifying it. It will not be technically accurate, but it will fit the mind. Anyway, so that pattern of ripples contains the information about all those pebbles that were tossed in there. Oh, and by the way, ancient Polynesian navigators navigated with maps that were basically overlapping curves and crescents and circles. You know this? There were ripple patterns and a summation of the way that the ocean currents repeat and overlap. A hologram contains the whole pattern by representing it as overlapping waves instead of pixels, instead of dots. With me so far? So, if I were to take this hologram, say a picture of, the vendor's room, and I were to cut it in half and hand it out, the two people would be able to see the whole room. They might have to turn a little bit, but they'd see the whole room. They cut it again and cut it again and hand it out to more people, you can still see the whole room, though at some point you have to crane your neck quite a ways to see, oh yeah, I can see the back end of the room. What else do you run into? It begins to get grainy because it is only going to be able to support the resolution of the material that it was imprinted upon. With me so far? This sort of makes sense. It contains the whole universe. Guess what? When the universe is Aurelius size, the whole pattern is still there, but because it's such a small piece, it may take some really, really contortionism to see every angle of the universe. And because it's made out of human flesh, it may be a little grainy because, you know, there's only so much. So the pattern of the whole is still present, though highly compressed and grainy. With me? Okay. So when those musicians are jamming together and they know where they're going and the music just flows, it is because their little dark under lower self piece connected with this one, connected with this one, and guess what? We're now a slightly larger piece of the universe. Do you understand what I'm saying? So it is not a conscious awareness, but what you've actually done is the shadow is the medium upon which those ripples are recorded. Yes, sir?
Are you explaining the same concept as is traditionally called a group mind?
Ah, here's what I'm going to suggest. Group minds also have group shadows. And as anyone who has been in a group, groups have shadows. So I would say that when you create a group mind, you also create a group shadow. So the two, and in the sense that, you know, one metaphor or comparison was that the shadow was like the code underneath, the operating system underneath. Or in this case, the idea of the shadow being like the medium that, now mind you, the mind part is reading the pattern. But the actual medium of holding and recording is not directly accessible, except through those places where your lower self, that's the light lower self, talks to the dark lower self, middle to middle, high to high. Eventually, if you're a highly evolved being, everybody's talking to each other and playing nice, which is, you know, part of the goal of spiritual evolution and magic, but that's not such an easy thing. But when we actually do magic in a group and our energies combine, our consciousness combines, part of what is also happening is we are reconnecting at that level as well. And for a moment, we become a slightly larger representation of the universe, a slightly larger pentacle, if that term applies for you. Does that term apply to anybody? Okay. How about scale model, which is actually my segue because I'm keeping track on time. If you look at the middle self, by the way, I will say that the middle self gets bashed a lot. It gets bashed a lot. At the same time that this is the place that people go, oh, that's that horrible monkey brain, you know, that's that chatter in the head that I can't silence, or that's where all the ego stuff lives and all that manner of stuff. Well, that may be true, but the last time I checked, generally we identify the middle or the center as being an important place. So by the power of names, if it is your middle self, it is your center self, and is therefore an important thing, not something to be subjugated. Sometimes there is a shortcut that is taken to gain access to more spiritual awareness or psychic awareness or magic that involves a turning down or a toning down of the middle self. And to a degree, this is necessary because many human beings, not all, but many live in a kind of white-knuckled, hands on the steering wheel with the middle self very, very firmly in charge. And that does get in the way, but it's not the only thing. Here I'm going to say, this is actually where as above, so below lives. Middle self recognizes patterns. Middle self is not just the lower mind that we speak of, but also higher mind. If I were to place it on the tree, what would be the place that's the center? Tiferet. When we are doing Tiferet properly, thought is not a bad thing. Because at that point, there is a it is also the place where things balance out, and thought is informed by all the other parts and not simply by the small self or the small personality stuff. You with me? We also have a very different concept of selfhood when we're doing that part well. Now, the micro-macro order is important because it is the middle self that is the proper bridge between the above and the below. We often take the shortcut of connecting the upper and the lower as a way of getting quick access to the divine or to the magical or to the spiritual. And then we end up with folks that are underdeveloped. If you look at someone and say, wow, they've got big arms, but they've got pencil legs. Just to get an image going. Or if you have the idea of somebody who is absolutely wonderful is in one part of their life and can't get it together anywhere else. The point is that the middle self should be like the center of the tree, if you use that as a metaphor, the place where we bring all those disparate things that are pulling us in all directions into balance. Now, I'm going to say something about the shadow of the lower self and the middle self and the higher self. I'm going to jump around a little bit on this one. So, do you know what a neurosis is? Or imagine I'm holding up the very latest version of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. You with me? We used to have a counselor that lived with us, a friend of ours, and we used to flip through it and try to pretend a new diagnosis of the day. It was a fun game. It was a fun game. But here's what I'm going to suggest. The middle self shadow is where much of what we consider to be mental illness lives. Do you understand what I'm saying? It may be fueled. It may be impassioned. It may be emboldened by the above and the below. But the middle self shadow is where the shadow imprints on and remembers, is the medium for everything in the culture, everything in the household, everything, all the obsessions, all the patterns. It has nothing to do but collect pattern. Unless it has made a working relationship with the light half. If the middle self, light half, and the dark half are working together. I'm going to give you an example of someone who is now passed on of blessed memory, is an example of what is possible. A lovely woman named Stephanie Marvel, who passed away in a terrible car accident. And there's a long, long story that I will leave out if anyone wants to hear it. Stephanie is exactly the sort of person that most groups would have rejected from joining their coven, lodge, or grove, or group, or whatever. I will describe the reasons why, and then I will describe why she's an example of, or was, I can't do that, of why she made their middle self shadow work. So, she was raised by a untreated, cross-addicted, bipolar mom. Good starting point. She grew up and became addicted to a variety of things and also was diabetic and schizophrenic. With me so far? And also been raped twice. So far, so good? Okay. She did the impossible. So, she found her way into sobriety and clarity and focus. And then she said, and now I want to do magic. Now, generally, when somebody approaches you with that particular history, it's usually not going to work. Here's what she did and what I believe is possible. So as a for example, and I don't want to belabor all the stuff about her because there's much to cover. So by close observation, because she was in constant self-assessment at every level, including the parts that she didn't like, she was able to determine when she was in circle, when she was in ritual. Ah, if I smell wet earth, then what I'm about to see is my schizophrenia and not psychism. If I hear a high-pitched whine in the background, it is not a spirit's voice, it's my schizophrenia. If she cataloged and became aware of, these are the ways in which my illness manifests, these are the ways in which my psychism manifests, these are the time, and if she was at a place in a moment when she realized, ah, I'm not doing well, she would nod, cut herself out of the circle, and sit outside. Or check herself in for 3 days somewhere. The point is, she, and you know how you sometimes have to tell students, I can't teach you that, you're not ready for it, or it will make your brain explode? Something to that effect. On more than one occasion, because she, now this is where a schizophrenic's life is helpful in some ways. She actually took me up on an offer and said she would sit and literally have a council and sit at the table, light the candle, and meet with herself. By the way, not a dissociative personality. This was an intentional, I'm going to meet with my various parts and decide whether or not something was a good idea. So for example, she greatly enjoyed working the fires and tending the fires and the stones for Sweat Lodge. That was service she could do. But she knew that she could never learn how to pour because it would be managing other people's energy. Do you understand what I'm saying? She had the awareness. The only reason, and she was excited when everybody wanted to learn how to do trance work or aspecting, and then she went, you know what, that's a really bad idea for me. I don't know how to separate those things out yet. Had she lived long enough, perhaps. My point is, she was able to navigate through life, have a job, have an apartment, have a significant other, because she was in such constant dialogue with all her parts, including her middle self shadow, which she knew intimately and could therefore become aware of those things that were poking and pulling on her at all times. Now, Stephen raised a question earlier, and here's where I'm going to say the middle self shadow of groups is quite a tangled mess. Quite a tangled mess. Yes, sir. Oh, hell no. I'm going to be very blunt. Even though I believe in miracles and I have seen what I believe to be miracles, I believe in the power of pharmacology as an adjunct to things that are serious illness. And in Stephanie's case, she was blessed by her diabetes because the attitude she has was, you know, I can be as careful as I like, but I have type 1 diabetes. I need my insulin.
See, I worked in behavioral health for a while.
And yeah.
And most people came in because they were not compliant with their meds. And the spiritual people were the worst because they said, my spirituality should stop this from happening.
A little louder.
They said, my spirituality should stop this from happening. And the issue was to convince them, no, you have a physical illness that needs medication. Your spirituality will help you get through it, but you're not a bad person because you pray all the time and God hasn't cured you, or whatever their paradigm was.
I would actually chalk that up to middle self shadow. Actually, the idea is, if I am this, then the following should be true. That when we find ourselves doing the, if I am this, the following should be true, it's often the nudging from the lower self shadow, I mean middle self shadow. Middle self shadow is also the thing that we first experience when we become aware of, why does that person irritate me? Why am I feeling the way I'm feeling about this circumstance or situation? I'm going to say something about shadows and projection. Now, because it's such a lovely pop psychology term, pretty much everybody has said, oh, you're just projecting, or you're projecting your stuff on me. So far, so good? Well, the thing is, we don't just project our lights on each other, we project our shadows on each other. By the way, you've all projected your light on somebody when you were in the first throes of love, and all you could see was the love that you were projecting. But here's the thing about lower self and middle self and higher self shadow and projection. It is also the way we get well. It is hard to see our own shadow. Becoming aware of what we're projecting makes it possible. I'm going to suggest that it is the agency of the projection of shadow that allows self-help groups to work, whether or not they're 12-step programs or not. Let me take you there for a second, and then we'll get back on track. Normally, the issue with projection is it's a poor fit. What makes us feel a particular way doesn't necessarily fit perfectly onto the projection screen of the other individual. When you gather a group of people together that have a common issue to dialogue, to try to get well, there is a higher probability that there will be people in the group that the shadow that you're projecting actually fits them pretty damn well. So then you actually have dialogues with your own shadow. Do you understand what I'm saying? No? Okay, pretend for a moment that we are in a AA meeting. And there's a commonality of unpleasant and terrible things that have happened as a result of that illness. So let's say that we're discussing and I'm always listening going, oh God, she's going to open her mouth again and she's going to blah, blah, blah. I'm going to project myself onto you. And because we are all there gathered around the same problem, you probably have places in you that resonate strongly and actually reflect that energy back with greater fidelity than a miscellaneous group of people. Do you see what I'm saying?
And you may not want to go there.
And you may not want to go there, but when you answer back, if I say something, because there is some amount of commonality on what I projected on you, you're going to respond in a way that is more likely to make sense. Do you understand what I'm saying? By the way, there are also people that are devoured by the middle self shadow, and I'm going to go there in a second. You had a question, dear?
In my women's group I run,
yeah,
one of the classes I was led by Spirit to do with them was they had to put a check for everybody that had ever abused them in their lifetime, but I ended it with them having to put a check for everybody they abused, because I feel to heal, you got to learn that you too have abused people, right? So that would be them looking at their shadow selves then, right?
Right.
Okay.
Part of it, yeah. Let me take us to a different place and then kind of come back on here. How many people here believe or have a conviction that emotions and thoughts generate subtle forms? I hope everybody here. You know, when we feel something strongly, when we think something strongly, when we pour a lot of energy into it, it creates a pattern. It creates a form. That whether you call it that it exists on the astral or exists somewhere else, I don't care which terminology you use, but the idea is something comes into being that was generated by that. Okay. And we often call those thought forms as well. What about all the forms that are being generated that were not generated by quote-unquote thought, but were generated by individual shadow of each of the levels or collective shadow? Are you with me? Back to Forbidden Planet. That's my segue back. So what destroyed them was they unleashed the power of all the things that lived within them individually and collectively. Does the devil exist? In a manner of speaking. How many people have poured energy into the idea of the devil? Practically everyone. Practically everyone. So if we have all these minds imagining this being, pouring energy into this being, it exists. It functionally these beings exist. I don't want to get into the, you know, let's talk about demons and devils and la la la. Let's just say that there are highly evolved things composed out of human nature. Some of them are identifiable, like the devil I just mentioned, but how about another one? I'm going to use a magical one and a non-magical one. I had a friend, well, he eventually became a friend. He was actually a nemesis originally. So once upon a time in high school, there was a quarterback that used to shove me into the locker and do all the sorts of things that, you know, homophobic thugs do. I took care of that while I was in school and prevented him from doing it again. But a number of, I was the managing editor of the school paper and said, if you ever do that again, your photo is never on the sports page, ever. It stopped it. But many years later, I ran into him in college at a gay bar. And he had gone from being the big butch thug to the ugliest drag queen on the planet. He eventually transitioned out of that into a different identity. Do you know why he took on that identity? Let's pause for a moment, because it really wasn't real for him. He grew up with hatred of himself. He also grew up with hatred of the feminine and hatred of homosexuality and a dozen other things. I will not fill in all the details of his life, though he and I have actually been on panels together and told the story. He absorbed society's idea of this is what a faggot looks like and became everything. I mean, by the way, good drag is good. Just to be clear. But he became obsessed, devoured, consumed by the collective shadow of, and also he sought out punishment, because by doing that, what kind of attention do you think he attracted from the world? Not the kind that you would necessarily want. One of the things I'm going to suggest is that there are also these free-floating beings that are constructed out of human life, of both light and shadow, and they will attach to, in the same way that an individual can project upon someone, so does the group minds, and they're all interlocking. The middle self shadow is the shadow of the stereotype that stalks you. The middle self shadow is also the thing that comes in the middle of the ritual or the night and says, magic doesn't exist. Do you understand what I'm saying? All the rules of society, all the unnecessary taboos. Please note I'm saying unnecessary taboos because, frankly, there may be some that really need to be there. But the point is, all those things are set free because to the degree that we are not engaged with the shadow as individuals or collectively, then those things run free to do as they will and are attracted to whatever smells like blood in the water.
This sounds very much as what the media does, and it reflects it on people's minds. They build the thought form that's presented to them. This causes wars, all sorts of things.
And it does, and it's a combination of both a part that is apparent and the larger part that actually is where most of the muscle lives that is not visible for the most part. So the poor Krell were destroyed by their ids is the way that the movie calls it, monsters from the id, though it's not just the id, because the shadow exists in all three layers, in all three selves. I'm going to say something about the higher self shadow. And people go, really? How can the higher self have a shadow?
It has to.
But its nature is different. Did you have a...
Yeah, so would the middle self shadow, would that be where the dark night of the soul would take place?
Often.
Could you repeat the question, please?
The middle self shadow, I was asking if that's where the place of the dark night of the soul would take place.
And that depends upon what you mean by the dark night of the soul, because that's a term that means many different things in different communities. For example, is it a personal crisis of purpose or of faith?
I've seen it happen a few times where it was a crisis of faith where you start to question that faith because of things that have manifested in your life.
Okay. If it is about how you interface with your work or your world, that may be where it is. Let me suggest something about that, and then Jennifer, I saw your hand, yes?
Dark night of the soul exists on the middle self. The middle self is where humans have their definition of God, you know, of the divine. Not where actually God exists, but where you put the flesh and the hair and the clothing onto God and name them. And if you're in doubt, if you're in that place of transition, of learning, which is really what the dark night of the soul is, that's where it exists in that shadow self. That's where the dark night is, because in there you can no longer see that definition of God anymore in your own mind, in your own eyes, in your own life. But that's also where you find it again.
But I would say that all the huge spiritual crisis points are about encounters with the shadow. And rather than the idea of embracing it, or fighting it, or I have this horrible image that is unfortunately it is being sketched in my head in anime style, where this little Japanese schoolgirl goes up to the huge giant monster and touches it with a flower, and in my version then her head vanishes into the mouth of the monster. But my point is that one of the things is that, or how many people have read Wizard of Earthsea? Once upon a time, Ursula K. Le Guin wrote a masterpiece. So in that particular case, it's about being chased by one's shadow and ultimately confronting it and to some degree integrating it. Not always possible, in the same way that you can't love yourself out of every box. In the same way, until somebody figures out how to remove Gabura from the tree of life, until that happens, there will always be a need for conflict. And there's also a need for Hesed. Yes, ma'am. Doesn't matter.
Going back to necessary and unnecessary evil.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of...
Like death is necessary.
Right, but I'm thinking of something like Abu Ghraib prison and the atrocities committed at Abu Ghraib prison. They feel like our collective shadow being worked out, right, in really horrific ways. And I feel responsible for that, because I really feel like that's a collective shadow. That doesn't have much to do with the individuals. So is that necessary or unnecessary? We're working something out, and yet it's horrific. Can we work that out in better ways?
I would say that to the degree that we as individuals and then as groups, from the small groups all the way up to the level of nations, become more aware of where our lights and shadows are, we can make better choices to deal with things that are horrible situations.
Right.
However, I do not believe that that will happen anytime soon, nor should it. And let me tell you why. I think that we cannot shortcut the process of evolution. And by the way, my feeling is that if we did find better ways of doing things, the following would occur. Let's say that there are very few things in the universe that I believe in fully and without doubt. One of them is the bell-shaped curve. So long as you are beneath the abyss, so long as you are in manifest existence, the bell-shaped curve exists. Now, everybody know what it looks like? It kind of goes like this, and then it goes down, and then the middle is the average or median or mode, depending upon how you're drawing your stuff. Let's not get too technical, right? And then at the far extremes, you have outliers, or for those that are on the progressive end of it, or the future-leaning end of it, on the bleeding edge of creation. I think that never goes away. So let's say that collectively we made a huge jump forward over the course of the next, 500 or so years, a week in the great year. Then the whole curve would have moved, and we'd be having the same conversation, because our consciousness will have been raised to the point that we see things with greater nuance that are wrong. Do you know what I'm saying? So that shadow never goes away, and the awareness of things could be done better doesn't go away. However, the place where we draw the lines about what constitutes better is quite a different thing. Though I will say that the vast majority of what occurs in human affairs at this moment in history is primarily in the area of unnecessary pain, unnecessary evil. But we have no way out of it. How many people have taken courses and developed a grade point average? So, after you've been going on for a while in school, how easy is it to make your grade point average go up or down significantly? There is an inertia to the grade point average, and it takes a lot of change before it changes. There's also a similar kind of inertia, if you will, or resistance to that number changing, that can be applied to collective change on the level of human consciousness. Yes, ma'am.
In the Renaissance, mm-hmm. when the painters were depicting judgment, all the good souls here, all the bad souls, was that a point at which people were dividing this shadow and the negative and the positive?
I'm going to go astrological for a second, mm-hmm. because I think it clarifies where the current flavor came from. How many people speak pidgin astrology at least? A couple of words, at least your hellos, your goodbyes. Okay, because it is a language. And even if you don't do any of the other stuff, it is a powerful descriptive language. So we are in the age of Pisces, or at the tail, the leaving edge of it, if you will. Now, every age has a shadow. What's the sign directly opposite Pisces? Virgo. So the shadow of the Piscean age is Virgo. So, all signs have good and bad. So, the age of Pisces has Virgo as its shadow. Now, one of the things you can say about the Virgo energy pattern or consciousness pattern is Virgo makes distinctions. Yes? Virgo draws lines and boundaries, and Virgo wants things to be wholesome. When Virgo gets fed up, Virgo detaches and walks away from it. In the age of Pisces, and Pisces wants connection and universality, the Virgo shadow whispered into its ear and said, but standardize everyone's connection. Do you see what I'm saying? So, of course, the further we got into the age, if you will, the crisper and sharper. I'm sorry you don't fit the bed. We have to stretch your legs. Or cut the feet off. They're a little too long on you, Stephen. So the point is that the shadow of an age reveals the pervasive pattern. This is why, but they're good things. Clean water is also a Virgo thing. Bathing is good. The idea, there are all sorts of positive things that live in that Virgo shadow, but the age is as much informed by its shadow as it is by its light. So that when you look at an age, so Virgo would say, well, yes, spirit good, body bad. Yeah, there's the dirty and clean concept that is part of that energy. Yes?
When you're talking about this idea of the shadow self and necessary and good and evil, those are all human constructs that we've had in this physicality.
Absolutely.
So when we as our souls are evolving, while the humanists would continue on with these same paradigms, our souls evolving would move on to completely different beyond that, the shadows and the presumably.
Yes, and. I would say this. Everything we're talking about is human-shaped and human-colored. Mm-hmm. But even, like, if I were to keel over dead now.
Delete.
And I'm there. I know it. Thank you. So, I still have a light and I still have a shadow. Its configuration is different. Its boundaries are different. But you still have a shadow even if you don't have a body, even if you're beyond physicality and beyond. I'm going to say something terrible and dreadful and arrogant. I'm labeling it, all right? I believe that one of the errors of that has been foisted upon us by this particular combination of light and shadow of the age that we just went through, we have foreshortened, in other words, compressed and crushed and shortened the distance between here and the ultimate. In the same way that the Virgo energy wanted to make a clean divide between good, bad, dirty, clean, wholesome, unwholesome, it also created this idea of heaven and earth as being highly regimentally distinct. And the funny side effect of creating the idea of that divide is it also made it seem like there was not much distance between the bottom and the top of that continuum. Do you understand what I'm saying? It foreshortened our perceptions culturally about what that was. Do you understand what I'm saying? How about this? Instead of it being a big, broad continuum, instead of that, it's like we're looking at this tiny little line segment and saying that all of existence lives in this. Right. And it's not. It's not. So that, on the other hand, we are now moving. I'm going to move into another astrological bit. Then we're going to get on track again. And then I'm going to say, if you need a bio break, we're going to take a slight pause because it's hard to stay focused on this material, if you know what I mean. So we're moving into the age of Aquarius that also has as its shadow Leo. Okay. Let's think about that for a moment. Let's think about that. So, how many Leos in the room? Yay! So, I'm not a Leo. But I'm going to defend you, Leos, before I go there. My mom was a Leo. Anyway, the deal is that when a Leo is doing their proper work, they are meant to shine. They are here to provide warmth and light and direction to the world. They're supposed to embody, you know, what it is to be a king or a queen. Yes, dear. You are. When a Leo is doing their job, the reason that they like being the center of attention is because they are being an example of what that life should be. And there's a difference between shining and in bringing warmth and light to others and shining and saying, ooh, pretty, look at me. Do you understand what I'm saying? So, let's go to the lions for a moment. Let's go to the actual representation of them. A lion is mostly not doing a whole lot. I mean, right? The lionesses do most of the work, but that's that is quite true, actually. But the point is that the lion represent and the sun energy is there to shine. Now, the negative qualities are often represented as center of the universe is me, and not in the beautiful metaphorical way, but the other way, or the need to be recognized, right? Okay. By the way, Leo is the sign of cult of personality.
The lions also are really good at sex.
Absolutely. Which is good, because otherwise in the age of Aquarius there would be no sex.
But the male lion can go at it something right. Like 30 times in an hour.
Absolutely.
Any guys here?
So when we look at this, what does that mean about the shadow of the age that we're moving into?
You two?
Let's start from combine the two. The Aquarian energy does want to change the world, has the desire to make things better. And if they're using that Leo, their shadow, properly, then that provides the light and the leadership and the strength to bring about changes. Right? Or, I want to be the new Idi Amin. Do you understand what I'm saying? It also is, if it's listening to the shadow that is unhealthy, unbalanced, then the shadow of the age, if not bounded properly, turns the Uranian revolutionary iconoclastic energy of the age into 1,001 kingdoms of personality. Do you like North Korea? But you understand what I'm suggesting. So it could turn into a bright age. But the things we need to be aware of, Aquarius likes individuality. Individuality, by definition, means that somebody notices you're different and somebody appreciates it, which is what that Leo shadow feeds on. It is never a good idea to have a hungry shadow. And I may point at you in a moment, because there, what lurks within her. So, I'm a vegetarian, and I try to be a nice guy, mostly. But I also take my shadow out for walks and feed it red meat. What do I mean by that? I allow it to get what it needs. What happens to a large dog that is not allowed to romp? Bad things. So I had a number of friends that were mortified one day when they came and visited me. And they found that I was, you know, typing away on my laptop, writing, while Hellraiser was playing on the TV in the background. You don't mind seeing an occasional bloody movie, do you?
No, I enjoy it. I love vampire movies.
There you go. So the point is that if I do not feed my shadow what it needs, it will find ways to get my attention or subvert me in ways that I would never be able to be creative about. So that rather than saying, any ex-Catholics? Yay! So, and I was in the kind of family where, like, you know, there was always like, somebody in the family should grow up to be a saint, you know, that kind of. I'm exaggerating, not much. Or a priest. Just the anti-saint, usually. But in any case, the idea was that you should be able to not have a fun, visceral response to certain sorts of things. I would say that when we deny what we are, we ask for trouble. And to the degree that we provide our middle self, our lower self, and our higher self shadow, by the way, the higher self shadow is the part that actually does say the with God, all things are possible, and I don't need to have a job. Do you want to see the perfect example of the higher self shadow? Pretend we're in India. I am standing by a tree. Shiva said that I must not put down my foot for 7 years. Well, indeed, but you find 1,001 crazy holy men who are doing exactly that sort of thing. It is the higher self shadow. It is the desire to imprint essence upon the earth. Now, here's the thing. There's a reason why there is a process for birth. When the higher self shadow tries to assert itself, all the intervening layers are ignored. In other words, it is the desire to bring heaven to earth without the trouble of hand-walking it to all the departments to get it stamped and all the permits approved before it can be given to the engines of the universe to construct it. Do you understand what I'm saying? No safety checks, basically, this is so pure and beautiful, it's a lovely essence, this should be able to come into being here without all the intervening nasty steps. That's the higher self shadow. and whether it occurs as someone just being a little spacey or somebody making poor choices because they believe that spirit will provide, it creates trouble. This is also the place where a higher self-shadow is actually where the thing lives that says, Karen, dear, I love you so much that because you are doing a mortal sin, I will burn you. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because the only thing that matters is way, way high up, not all the intervening in-betweens. So the higher self-shadow, when it expresses in the world, it's really pretty, in the same way that the light part of the higher self can be so amazing, when the higher self-shadow expresses, it is when you see the untempered, untested, unbalanced expression of, this is what I believe is my spiritual truth, and it must be so here. Yes, ma'am. I wouldn't say higher self in his case. The idea was if Hitler was an example of higher self shadow, and I would say he was definitely an example of shadow running amok on the planet, but I would not pin it on the higher self, frankly. Okay. But I will point out something about Hitler and the shadow since you brought it up. I've actually spoken to a number of Germans who said that, and I'm also going to use Steve Jobs as an example. In the presence of Hitler, when he was speaking, they believed. And then when they walked away, some of them would go, why did I believe that? Or in the case of Steve Jobs, the famous reality distortion field that's actually the reality distortion field, which, by the way, that phrase has crept into some magical environments. Actually, that was coined to describe Steve Jobs' effect on his co-workers and employees. Because while he was in the room, you believed it. When he... Yes, but let's do the scary flavor of charisma and also the positive. Because I actually think Steve Jobs, he's a human being, good and bad, blah, blah, blah. But for a moment, I would say that on balance, many good things came from his life. On balance. And by the way, we have to say that about all of us, because I'm sure that 50 years from now, 100 years from now, if you are remembered, oh, they were so amazing about that. Oh, but how could they be so benighted about the following? And this is what always happens, you know, it's the flow of history. Absolutely. It's the flow of history. And as much as I love Dion Fortune, there are moments when I'm reading and going like, I must remember that she is a woman of her era. Do you know what I'm saying?
It took me 30 years to find flaws in my own philosophy.
But the point is, this is just human nature. But on balance, they both had the same reality distortion power, and it's a shadow power. Here's how it works. Right now, if I ask you to trace that little thought bubble back down to find where did that image just come into being in your head? Do you understand what I'm saying? That you may have words and images, your flow of consciousness. Where is that flow of consciousness arising from? And you could, depending upon how much meditation you've done, how much inner work you've done, you can still your mind, you can quiet your mind, and you can pull it back and find some of the places where things are coming from. But ultimately, this thing that you can call the preconscious is really hard to parse, hard to make sense of. Wait, everything's connected. Everything is one. Here's a middle self, shadow and light thing, and I'm going to stand up here for a second because it's easier. So pretend we're one step up on the level of Yasod or the astral or whatever you want to think about it. Okay? We exist on all levels simultaneously to some degree, but our awareness may not be clear and lucid on all of them. So when I am thinking, because I am an arrogant human being, I'm going to say, oh, these are my thoughts. Well, I'm sure I'm being influenced by the other people in the room and by other beings in the room as well. But what else? Aren't all of you imagining and thinking things, plus the ones of you that are in the room that don't have bodies? With me so far? So that the place where thought arises is up here, and this place is populated by the thought forms, the images of all the beings that are focused on this locus, this nexus in time. With me so far? And there's also a landscape there, right? So that landscape is invisible to us. It is the undifferentiated gray space that becomes everything, that is shaped by the collective shadow as well, or the individual shadow. So let's say that, hold that thought here. We're playing holodeck, right? And over here, there's a field of waist-high grass. In the summer, there will be bugs. If I take the lawnmower and cut a path through that waist-high grass to the circle where we're going to hold ceremony, I am guessing that a goodly number of you are going to choose to walk the path. The contrarians will, of course, you know, force their way and collect all the ticks and chiggers that they like. But most of you will follow that path. What if someone like a Steve Jobs or Hitler, who had an overdeveloped set of shadow muscles, basically wrenched the local astral into the shape of their thoughts and enclosed you within it? You would walk that path, that thought path, that thought train, because it was the easiest one to take. Or, do you understand what I'm saying? So that, and it is hard to ferret out, because if you're not on talking terms with your shadow, you're going to think they're your thoughts. You're going to think that it's your impression, rather than your preconscious mind and your shadow self just ran into a wall or a boulder that had been laid there to prevent you from going in that direction. Do you understand what I'm saying now? By the way, I've used this in simple ways. Last time I was in New Orleans, there was a very drunk man. It was 4 o'clock in the morning. A bunch of us were waiting for the trolley, and he was looking for trouble. So he was drunk. I felt like I had a right to do this because I wanted to. So I simply imagined that the lamppost that we were standing on was on top of a very, very high hill, and that the slope was very steep, and that it had been raining, and it was muddy and slippery. And the man, as he stumbled about drunk, kept ranting and getting, you know, but he kept like walking further and further away from us because he had to go downhill. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yes.
When Hitler spoke, mm-hmm. It didn't work on everyone.
No.
What's the difference?
No. To the degree that somebody has made connections between all their different layers, if you will, to the degree that you are comfortable paying attention to the fact that that you are more than just your waking self, if you are listening to your gut, because the gut and the shadow are connected as well. And remind me to go there. To the degree that people are connected, and this could have been because of formal training, or this could have been simply because grace and life conditions had led them to develop enough awareness to go, you know, that's interesting, but that's not right. If you find that you can understand those parts of you, then you wake up to it. Yes, sir.
Something about that reminds me that, not necessarily going to the extremes of Steve Jobs or Hitler.
Yeah.
Even in the middle, you can utilize that capability to heal or to bring people out of certain thought trains that can help them. Like, no, you don't want to be here, and then guide them and talk with them and say, come with me, it's over here, one step sideways, you know?
Here's the thing, and yes, it's there's the shadow of itself is not a bad thing, in the same sense that power is neither a bad thing nor a good thing. It's a question of how it is used. Here's the part where shadow is troublesome in a different way. We like the idea that we have clean boundaries. This is me, that's you, my stuff, your stuff, my energy, your energy. Well, the thing is that if shadow is the recording medium, if shadow operates in a holographic pattern at the lower level, if shadow operates in a interlocking scale models as above, so below, the little and the big resembling each other in multiple ways, or at the very top level, which we haven't really hit as much, the fractal description of reality. If we look at all those three, none of those are, this is where this stops and this begins. so that shadow is the place where we have the least control over what's me and what's not me. Which is also perhaps one of the reasons why it is pushed aside. But to return to the positive thing is that that also means that it's possible for that to work in assisting somebody who is bound up, who is locked up, because it is a place where there is more connection. I can close my eyes rather easily. I don't have ear lids. In other words, I can close my eyes and go, and you know, I suppose I could put my fingers in my ears and yell la 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 la, but I'm still hearing most of it anyway, like that horrible noise in the background. So the point is that it is really hard to close out the shadow connection, but we can close out the light connection easily. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because you can't close out the shadow part connection, you can only become aware of, oh, that's where that's coming from. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yes, sir.
I think one of the good analogies for us older geeks, there was a Star Trek episode where Kirk went
to Star Trek always works.
Transporter, and basically it showed him light and shadow selves separated.
Right, right.
And they couldn't function separately.
No.
You need both parts. The good part was too compassionate to make any decisions. The shadow part, the way it was paranoid and completely self-centered, but that had a lot of the leadership qualities. They actually needed to get back together to be able to function.
And keep that in mind, and I'm going to say we've been talking 1 hour, 17 minutes. Can we take a please, short, like 5 minute water, rest, breathe? And I will not be offended if you have to do something else, but I would be happy to see your bright, shiny faces again after the 5 minute break. Okay, some questions in the interim. I'm going to start with gut stuff, and then I'm going to go with imagery for the middle self and the higher self shadow, okay? All right, most of the time we focus on the brain and maybe the spinal cord and spinal column if we've been having issues. But there is a big chunk of neural tissue, and where does it live? Well, actually, yes. How about the heart? Remind me to go to the heart, but let's start with the gut. The third largest cluster of neural tissue in the body is in the gut, literally. So what do you think runs that sinking sensation? What do you think gives you that knowing in your gut that something is right or wrong? You basically have another brain that lives in your gut. About a third of your neural tissue lives in the gut. It does not have consciousness of the sort that we call consciousness, so most physicians ignore it. If we were, say, a variety of octopus, and you were a marine biologist, and you were to cut it apart and try to understand it by that, you know, dissection reduction kind of thing, you would say, ah, here's, by the way, do you know the cool thing about octopus? Huh? They have a brain in each tentacle, and they are networked together, and most of their brain is actually one in each tentacle. They're actually an individual hive mind, which is why if you cut off a tentacle far enough back, it attempts to hunt and attempts to put food into the mouth that's no longer there. They do have a core, but basically it's more like the router than the brain, the thing that's actually in the head. But so that they looked at that and went, aha, if we were aliens chopping Tanner up and just paid attention to what was in front of us, we'd go, oh, they have three brains. And I'm not just talking about the threefold division here, but they have one here, they have one in the spine, and they have one in the gut. With me so far? But because the gut doesn't think in words or images, the gut thinks in shadow. Do you understand what I'm saying now?
Yep.
Gut feeling. Why do you think magic often hits the solar plexus so hard? Right? Now, Christopher was bringing up the heart. The heart, this is pure physical fact, is a powerful source of electromagnetic radiation, right? How do we restart a stopped heart? Boom, boom. Okay. The heart produces the strongest electromagnetic field in the human body. And indeed, there's a lot of evidence that when people are doing work together or whatever, that the electromagnetic field from each other's hearts interacts. Here's the part where the gut comes back into play. A lot of the control of that electromagnetic field in the heart goes wired directly to the gut instead of the brain. Do you understand what I'm saying? So that a lot of that, you know, sense of connection energy that comes from the heart is being decided by the third brain and not the one that speaks in words or images. Which is pretty cool. Which is pretty cool. And as I say, if we were objectively looking at the human form, we would have come to that conclusion a long time ago. But we have our perspectives and prejudices, and because there's no structure in that gut brain that looks like something capable of representational consciousness, there's no Broca's brain, there's no visual cortex. Do you know what I'm saying? Since those things aren't there, there can't be any thought there. I would say the heart is that which broadcasts and connects. That's the actual seat, if you will, but the heart is connected directly to it, so the heart is where the energy emanates and is received.
So Kabbalistically speaking, you've got the genitals as Yesod, you've got Tiferet as the solar plexus.
Right. And the solar part makes sense.
Yes.
But it's hard to parse because if I wanted to like stretch the Kabbalistic metaphor, then I would say is okay. This is just a geek moment. Pardon me, it's off topic. Okay, take the four central spheres, Hesed and Geburah and Hod and Netzach. You've got the sun in the center, right? Mm-hmm. Tiferet. Pull the tip up to form a pyramid. That is where higher heart and higher mind meet. So, okay, cool stuff. So that the gut is also one of the places where we process in the shadow way. It's also connected to our primary electromagnetic organ of sensing how other people are feeling and reacting. So that if you want to think of it that way, that is the Wi-Fi node that connects each of you, if you want to do it that way. But you get the idea?
Mm-hmm. So clarification, I always associate gut instinct with nefesh, but it sounds like you're saying gut instinct can connect with all three parts of the soul.
I'm suggesting that because it is the part of us that is most... The gut consciousness is the physical seat of shadow awareness.
So it doesn't matter what shadow we're talking about.
And I hate to slice it so fine, because it's kind of like you could say somebody is a Sag or a Leo or a Gemini, or somebody has a fiery nature, but there's also everything else mixed in there too, because there has to be some of that. We are also holographic, so that you'll find some of it disseminated everywhere. But if I had to say, this is the place where that stuff happens, and this is the place where that stuff is transmitted, yes. Yes, sir.
What do you see the guf as?
Oh, God. I'm going to say something that falls outside of the class, but you don't care, do you? Okay. So there's this funny thing that people talk about that's kind of like the fall, whatever that means. At some point, we parted company with our physical vehicles. I think that we have had, Who's heard of selfish genes? Or the idea that the genes in our body drive us to do things to replicate themselves or keep the species going, etc. I would say, and people have got the idea that there is X amount of knowledge or wisdom or information or drive that is built into the body and itself. If you've ever seen somebody who is brain dead but their body is still kicking gangbusters, I believe that our physical vehicles, our goof, if you will, or goof, because I see the image of Goofy. Cartoon mnemonics are always good. It has gone on its own path. The fall is that because we were not connected properly or enough, that the physical body is almost its own nation species evolving separate from that which inhabits it. So one of the reasons why we are drawn to do certain things where our bodies and our spirits or souls are not always in alignment is that we have drifted far enough apart that the physical bodies that we are born into are not a perfect match. They are working their own destiny out. Theory.
Yeah, interesting.
Theory, but I'm inclined to believe that in the same way that the arc of evolution applies to everything, and a ignored shadow becomes a cranky shadow, the shadow that, or the person ignored in the committee meeting whose hand has been up for 3 hours and you don't recognize them, they find a way to assert their agenda. And I think the body is asserting its agenda because there are 1,001 ways in which, no matter how you look at it, the human body is not always in alignment with what we're drawn to or what we do.
Would that be the cause of some cancers?
Certainly the body's at war with itself. It has lost cohesion. So anyway, so I don't know that for a fact, but I think it may be one of the outcomes of not having proper relationship with the shadow is that our bodies are going, you know what, I don't need your consciousness exactly in the same way that you need me, and it is evolving along its own track.
There are some spiritual disciplines based on listening to the body, aren't there?
Yes.
That lead you to a lot of knowledge.
Yes. There's
and
a different...
And they're incomplete, just and like any system that doesn't include the body.
But the knowledge that... There's such a thing as... do you believe that there is memory in the blood, genetic memory?
Yes.
And many of us do, and I do. Where is that encoded? Well, indeed, but it's encoded in flesh. It's encoded in however, you know, because we're probably going to find out three other things that are in the mix that we don't know about yet. But what we do know is it is encoded in the body. It is encoded in the flesh.
Well, and you were talking about the gut being kind of the body's brain. Well, it's the pelvis that is actually the blood manufacturer, so it's
right
down in that area. That
right. But, you know, And it may sound like just geeky fun, and then back, I won't forget your point. Haven't you been taught that if you see something in nature, it means something? In the same way that we don't have, or we attempt not to have a separation between our spiritual path and our beliefs about magic and that which we discover from science, so that if we notice something like neural tissue or where blood comes from or any number of other things, we should pay attention and meditate and contemplate on why is that and what does that represent on multiple levels. Go ahead.
It's changing. The attitude's changing. But part of that Virgo shadow before, too, was if you're on a spiritual path, you have to ignore, discipline, almost demean the body. And I wonder if that's where some of that evolutionary separation you're talking about came from.
It may be, but the only thing we know for sure is that there was a sense of dirty and clean and spirit being more important than matter. That part we know for sure. But don't underestimate how much lives in the flesh that stays with the flesh and does not pass on with the soul or spirit that departs. If we could do the Wayback Machine whenever that, from my perspective, happened, we would find a place where, like right now, if I'm playing the I'm dropping dead thing again, okay? So that part of me would go forth, and all the different sheaths and auric shells would detach and summarize and do whatever kind of transformation. You're all praying for me for 40 days, right? So while that's going on, there are things that are dropped and left behind, yes? Okay. All that genetic memory that's stored, all that blood memory, I'll call it that, that's stored in the body, that's not encoded in words or images or in light, guess what? You don't take that with you. It stays in the body and gets passed, which is passed to the next generation. Right. But you understand there are things that we do not take when we depart, and they're not necessarily leaving the dross behind. Yes? I'll say one other bio fun thing, and then I want to make sure that I talk about some imagery for the middle self and higher self comparable to the idea of the flight of birds or fish or whatever. There is more not you than you in that physical body. And a lot of you know that, but if you were to count, not the size of the cells, but if you were to count how many cells in you are flora and fauna that help you digest your food, things that live in your blood, things that live in your skin, things that live in your hair, there's actually more non-human cells in that vehicle than there are human cells.
There are more bacteria in the human gut than there are stars in the sky.
Right. Right. Let alone everywhere else in the body, by the way. But the point is, even your physical vehicle is an ecology of which the human cells, even your physical vehicle is an ecology of which the human cells are the minority. Okay? Science that bears metaphysical exploration. Okay. So let's do the middle self shadow moment of brilliance. Because we had the idea of the musicians or the fish swimming and moving faster than thought, etc. Are there moments where scientists and poets and theorists of politics or whatever who've been studying and studying and studying look and all the pieces suddenly fall into crisp clarity and they get a huge aha? That, my friends, is courtesy of the middle self shadow that has been carefully collecting all those bits that you've been focusing on, that you've been studying, that you've been mulling over in your head, and that's the unseen agent that then puts all those bits together. Yeah, because that's the middle self shadow. It's focused on this relates to this, the as above, so below, or how the universe is all these different interrelationships, and you are focused on all these bits of facts and information, and then suddenly they go pop. That's the middle self shadow when it is not being neurotic. it's an amazing and beautiful thing when it happens. Yes? So let's look at the higher self shadow when it's doing its good thing, and I'll give two good ones, and also bring in the idea of fractals. So, without being, let's see, do we have anybody? Usually there's somebody in the room that has a screensaver or a tie or a t-shirt or something that has a fractal image on it. Do you know what I mean by a fractal?
Yeah.
Who does not? It's okay to do that. All right. Cool, expanding, geometric patterns. You've got a formula and it produces this lovely, 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 you know, like the Mandelbrot series or whatever, and if you zoom in, there's more richness and diversity, and you zoom in, you're with me, you've seen these.
Yeah.
You've seen these. And nature actually uses these a lot. Right. So that is a description of what essence is. Essence is the formula that can then infinitely go in and out and turns into detail. Thorin has got a lovely, beautiful image on her iPad, right? But essence is a fractal. Essence is a fractal. And the connection between the higher self shadow parts are fractal, in that they are all portions of the same formula, or all on the same little set of crenellated curves. So, when the shadow of the higher self expresses itself, is when you have that one little seed that shows up in your consciousness that's actually this huge zip file that unpacks itself into all these new things. It isn't anything, but when you start to unpack it, the unpacking doesn't stop. Does that help a little bit? This one's harder to deal with because it's the higher self shadow. Another expression of it is the higher self shadow. We talked about Hitler and Steve Jobs and their reality distortion field affecting us in a particular way. Have you ever been in the presence of someone who, either on a regular basis or on a temporary glowing moment, evokes a sense of bliss, connection, joy, divinity in you just because of their glow? Probably, you know, and even if you haven't been around, quote unquote, a holy person or avatar or adept or whatever, you've probably been in the presence of somebody who was so happy, so having a peak moment, so having a moment of perfection that they were the thing in the room that lit everybody up. A real one. Absolutely. The idea of receiving a blessing simply by the sight of them. Darshan, yeah. Except the higher self shadow, when it expresses that way, it isn't a passing moment. Pause for a moment. Though there may be benefit to go, wow, I'm having a perfect moment, or I'm observing somebody who is in a moment of, I can think of recently somebody straight out of an initiation, they were blazing. And just being around them, looking at them, changed how you felt. That's okay. But what if it stuck with you? The thing about shadow is you can't remove it. You can't remove it. You can form a different relationship to it. You can find a different place. The shadow of the higher self is like the distinction between happiness and joy. And I'm going to define them how I'm using them in this moment because, you know, language sucks. Happiness is, you just gave me a chocolate malt. And as long as that chocolate malt lasts, I'm a happy camper. Once it is gone and the last bit of the flavor has faded from my mouth, it too has faded. Joy is an abiding thing. Joy is something that you retain and is also as much about awareness and perspective as it is about a passing experience. Okay? So I would say that those kinds of transformations, because, and I'm going to say, and I use the initiation example for a reason. Because if, and I'm going to use horrible language, if an initiation actually took, and I know that's a controversial concept, but I also think that transplants fail, right? If it took, it's because the higher self shadow became part of them as well. In other words, you may offer the spark of light, but it only flourishes if it's in the dark soil of their higher self shadow.
Everything grows in the dark.
So that if it abides, then it grows into their higher self shadow as well. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the spark, you plant it, but if it's not, doesn't fall on soil where it's going to grow. So that's one of the reasons I'm using initiation, but it is lasting transformation as opposed to transitory transformation when it is working well. Because it is about changing their essence, changing their fractal, changing their equation that describes them, because that's what occurs at that level. Make sense? We have 5 minutes. Questions, comments, clarifications?
You were saying that we, by evolution, it sounded like separate more and more from our bodies. I think we, I'm talking about the soul or whatever. Now, that implies that there was a time in which they were close.
I sure believe they were.
Like when?
You know what? I'm going to go mythic time because there we have absolutely no way to narrow that down. We could collect a group of seers and get out our scrying balls and do past life regressions and come up with a variety of at this moment in human evolution it changed. And I will go that I'm not sure that that's doable, but I will say that it has been a very long time. And that's all that I can tell and believe without just giving you my flight of fancy. But it has been ongoing. And the separation is not so large because otherwise we would no longer be able to incarnate into these forms. But I do believe that it is a separate thing in growth at this moment. Not fully, and perhaps not forever, but at this moment it is happening. I believe that. Now, any other questions, comments? Yes, sir.
I think I'm getting a little lost with the higher self shadow.
Yep.
because in the other shadows,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand that there's good and bad shadows and
healthy or unhealthy, productive, unproductive.
But it seems like the higher self shadow is going to be, from what you kind of described mm-hmm. here at the end, is more of a positive thing.
But, except it burned Karen at the stake.
Okay. So if it swings too far in the pendulum,
the higher self shadow is the part that can convince you that some spirit, quote unquote, spiritual or religious principle is more important than the individual in front of you.
Is that what would cause martyrdom?
It can. It certainly can. And there are many ways that the definition of a monster is a thing that is not in its proper place. Definition, do you know what I'm saying? Where air is good, breathing is good, a tiny bubble of oxygen floating in my blood, bad. So that when we take the higher self, and in particular the higher self shadow, and bring it straight to earth without all its intervening transformations and modifications that it approaches the earth plane, then if it shows up unprepared, here's the problem that I think humans have with this one. The role of Yasod or the astral or whatever terminology you use is to do the final checklist of, is this ready for prime time? Is this ready for physical manifestation? Is it wholesome and healthy, or does it have to be recomposted into the universe, right? We have enough free will to sometimes bypass all the checks and balances and drag a chunk of that all the way down to here, skipping all the checks on the way down. And that's when we express that higher self or higher self shadow in a way that is not productive, unhealthy, really goes against the tide of evolution. Because otherwise, at some point along the way, it would have been checked and rechecked and not happened at all. Does that... As I said, this is a work in progress. Fourth time I'm giving it, and maybe one or two more, and I'll attempt to begin to write something down about it. But you're all guinea pigs, and I thank you for that.